Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 698. My shirt says Bob. We've got some jokes for your classroom. We've got some wonderful resources, and we're going to do a shout out to Kevin Davis this week. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right. Welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm all right. It's kind of warm, but breezy, and Ooh. It's going to get cooler all day.
How warm is it going to get in your neck of the woods?
40s.
Oh, we're going to get to 70.
Yeah. Good for baseball, which is, I'll be watching this afternoon, hopefully.
At 1 o'clock. So,
it's a 1 o'clock game.
Yeah, so we have to get a show going.
Yeah. Hey, did you hear about the duck that walked into a pharmacy and says, give me some chapstick and put it on my bill?
Ah, that one cracked me up.
Yeah.
That was good.
Quick quiz for you. What do you call a romantic dinner on a hot air balloon?
No clue. I'm single for a reason, Troy. I don't have no skills in this area at all. This is the wrong quiz for me.
It's an update.
Oh.
All right, here's a tip for you. Don't buy anything from a blacksmith. You know why?
Okay. No.
Everything they have is forged.
I got it. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
Let's see here. Oh, I thought about going on an almond diet.
An almond diet.
Yeah, but that's just nuts.
Oh, yeah, sure.
To be frank, I'd have to change my name.
Oh. I knew a kid in college. Go ahead.
No, finish.
I knew a kid in college who found a shirt and said Bob on it, one of those mechanic shirts, you know?
Yeah.
And he liked the shirt. He needed a shirt, so he just pulled that out of the recycle bin and walked around campus wearing a shirt that said Bob on it. His name was Kevin. But everybody called him Bob because he read the name on the shirt. So he would use it as a way to figure out who knew him and who didn't know him and was just talking to him.
Yeah.
They'd call him
That's
Bob.
Smart, actually. That was like...
I agree.
smart do kid. People actually know me, or are they just using context clues?
Right. And that's how he'd figure things out, right? And it was like, oh. I'm tempted to ask him if he still has the shirt. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. You should keep that. And then finally... What do you get when you cross a joke with a rhetorical question?
I'm not sure I should answer this one.
This one did not go over well. This one, by the way. This one was not a hit. But you know what is a hit?
Mm.
The Middle School Science Minute. And this one is on Citizen Science Month. And citizen science is something that Dave references frequently and is a big believer in. And it's something that's powerful for kids. So this is pretty awesome. And getting kids involved in science can be a lifelong activity. So without further ado, let's turn it over to the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the National Science Teaching Association's blog for April 1st, 2026, and it was written by Jill Nugent, and she wrote an article entitled Spark Curiosity This Spring. And she said, that as science educators, we know that science isn't just a body of knowledge. It's a way of knowing, thinking, and understanding the natural world around us. Opportunities for students to participate in authentic science practices can deepen their understanding of the world. One way is to provide such opportunities by incorporating citizen science experiences in the classroom and schoolyard during Citizen Science Month this April. And if you'd like to learn more about citizen science projects, you can visit the Citizen Science Project at scistarter.org/citizen-science. Citizen science refers to public participation in science. It can include activities such as observing local wildlife, monitoring weather, studying seasonal change, measuring water quality, and more. Citizen science opportunities are available in subjects ranging from astronomy to zoology and everything in between. This April, Citizen Science Month aligns with a collective effort to document 2.5 million acts of science, 2.50, to mark America's 250th birthday. Acts of science include a wide range of contributions, from submitting observations to participating in virtual events to completing introductory training. An act of science is any way that someone contributes to science during April. It all counts, and it all adds up. Everyone can play a role in shaping science through curiosity, contribution, and community, and classrooms can make a positive difference through these efforts. This spring season, you may wish to bring acts of science connected to the classroom experience. Acts of Science Connected is a live, interactive series of citizen science events designed to bring real-world science to you during Citizen Science Month. The weekly virtual sessions will each spotlight a different scientific project and lead researcher, encouraging participants to learn, engage, and contribute to real scientific discoveries together, whether in school, at the library, or from home. And you can visit that website at pages.scistarter.org/connected. Engagement in citizen science helps make science tangible and relevant for students. Incorporating citizen science in the classroom, curriculum, and community provides the following benefits. Provides authentic engagement in science practices. Provides for place-based learning opportunities. It cultivates transferable skills and provides development of science identity. Educators can incorporate citizen science in ways that align with curricular needs. For example, in 1 to 3 class periods, you may introduce a biodiversity project during a unit on ecosystems. Students could collect observations during a schoolyard walk, upload their findings, and then reflect on species diversity and the environmental factors that influence their results. If time allows, across a 2 to 4 week-long unit, students could regularly collect data in the schoolyard, weather data, for example. Students could track patterns over time and compare their findings with larger data sets, culminating in a student-created artifact of their project. Additionally, beyond the school day and school year, citizen science engagement with family and in the community expands options for participation. Let April serve as a catalyst for curiosity and real-world science in your classroom. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
So you had vacation last week.
I did. It was wonderful. Oh, my word.
I did not have vacation last week. So what did you do on your vacation? And I have this, if you go over to middleschoolmatters.com, where you can check out the show notes and all that good stuff, I have vacation in quotes. Yes, yeah. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. We talked before the show. So I did. I am weird. I know this. I accept it. I had fun at the beginning of the week putting together curriculum for fifth grade social studies because my boss said, hey, what are they supposed to know in fifth grade? Which I thought was odd because I teach seventh. And and then for the past 3 years, we've done these this summer thing where we sit down and we write a whole bunch of curriculum at curriculum camp in Correct. The summertime. And then we put together these things like, you know, this is what the scope and sequence is. This is what the standards are. These are resources, that sort of thing. And then, so when I say, we have documents that have all that stuff, right? You know, he goes, we do. And I said, yes, I will send them to you. So I sent him the links. He says, thank you. This was helpful. I talked to him later and he said, do we actually have any of this down? I said, tell you what, I have some stuff I put together for a teacher years ago. Let me pull it out and brush it up a little bit and I'll give it to you and you can see if that's something that you want. And when I pulled it up, I realized I did it for math. I didn't do it for social studies. So I thought, well, you know what? We should create something. So I did. I sat down and created, the Michigan. So open education resources are wonderful things, right?
Yes. That was a great movement, which I was really hoping was going to have an even bigger impact than it has had. But yes.
Well, Go Open Michigan has open textbooks for all the content areas. And social studies for fifth grade is 7 chapters long. That's very, very doable. So I sat down and I started cranking out some material for fifth grade. Now, the first thing I did was I sat down and I made question banks. I think I've got 2 chapters left to go. But I've got question banks for chapters 1 through 5. And they're all based and tagged with standards. And then I have another set of questions for each chapter for ELL students. So it's the same questions, but simpler language and all tagged to standards. Mm-hmm. And then I've got questions for chapters 1 through 5 that are special ed questions, which means they've been modified. Instead of 4 questions for an answer, there's only 4 choices. There's 2 choices. And every single choice in all of them has feedback. Right. So if you click an answer and you get it wrong, it tells you why. If you click an answer and you get it right, it tells you why. And then each one of those 3 categories, they all have questions for each standard at all 4 different levels of DOK.
That's awesome. That feature of providing feedback is one that I always liked. I love that you could provide feedback and you're doing this in Moodle, right? That's where you're providing the feedback, or is this an H5P activity?
No, this is not H5P. The question banks I'm building are within Moodle itself. So the first thing I wanted to do was build the question banks. And then I went through and I had, and I'm using ChatGPT to help me. Because one of the nice things about this is that in order to do the tags and the feedback, I can go in and I've got ChatGPT now trained. I created a project just for fifth grade social studies and I started training it. I started saying, this is how we're going to do things. This is going to be our workflow. When I say we're going to do this, this is what you need to do. And over time, it's starting to predict what I wanted to do next. And it says, you know, in the interest of time and effort, I know you're going to do this next, so why don't I do both of these at the same time? Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I did not realize I was holding you back. And then there was one time where it suggested that it do something, and I was like, seems like a lot, but go ahead and do it. And 5 hours later is when I got my complete stuff done, which is a good thing. I left it go overnight, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been a fun experiment playing with the AI. But one of the cool things is that I was using a gift format. It's one of the ways that you can put questions into Moodle in kind of a batch upload. And all you need is a plain text file.
Right.
And I was running into a couple of difficulties. And so I told the, and I took a picture, a screenshot of the error I was getting. And I shared it with ChatGPT, and it says, oh, well, when you get that error, this is what happens. I was like, this is good. Cause I've been, this has been one of those mystery errors, you know, mm-hmm. You have a problem. Yes, I do. But I don't know what it is. You have to tell me what the problem is so I can fix it. And it's like, no, you just have a problem. That's not helpful. But when I put it in there and I described the problem to ChatGPT, it said, oh, well, it's one of these three issues. I can fix all three if you want. Yes, please.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And if I ran into it a couple of times and I said, I think we're having that problem again, ChatGPT looked at me and said, you know, if I do this in a different format as an XML file, we won't run into these problems. I was like, well, why didn't you say so? Give it to me in a Moodle XML format. So it did. And everything worked. Everything's worked fine since. So, and then it's been, I've been just cranking out the questions like crazy, and they're tagged. They're all tagged. And so if I want to do it by standard, so our elementary is all, their grading system is all by standard.
Yes. That's okay.
Once I train the teachers or show them how to do this, they can actually go in and pull questions, and they're all tagged with DOK levels, and they're all tagged with standards, and they're all tagged with chapter. They can go in and they can start pulling out questions that are all just based on one standard. And they could, if they wanted to, create a test from that, just that one standard, and say, here's an assessment. It's all just that one standard.
So you're using multiple tags. You're using
yes.
standards. You're using DOK. Is there yep. another? You think you said something else too, but.
Chapter.
Okay.
DOK, standard. And that's it. I think those three tags I'm using. It's put in a couple other tags for redundancy, but essentially it's those three tags. And mm-hmm. then I started, I went to ChatGPT and I said, I want you to pull out the vocabulary that is a bridge between fifth grade, sixth and eighth. And I, because otherwise it would give me a list of 30 or 40 words. And I was like, I can't do 30 or 40 words per chapter. That's just incredibly overwhelming. So give me the ones that are a bridge between 6 and 8 and fifth grade. And so it did. And that was more reasonable. It's like 12 words. I was like, okay. All right. So let's look at these, because these are the forward looking words. These are the ones that they're going to need to know when they get into 6th and 8th grade. And I started creating some vocabulary activities around it. And so I got 4 chapters done of the vocab. And then once I finish all 7 chapters, I'm going to go through and then I'll start building in the assessments. So when they go to export stuff, all the assessments will be located in one location. It'll be really easy to find as they scroll through. And then something else I've been doing is that I've been creating simulations. I'll say, look, I need a simulation on this. And something that I found has actually worked kind of nice after I've done a couple of these simulations with it is I said, all right, now I want you to suggest to me 3 different simulations we could do, based on this chapter. And one of the cool things that came out of that was I got a suggestion that said, you know what, we could create a simulation that bridges chapter 5 to chapter 6. So when you're done with chapter 5, in preparation of 6, use this as a bridge to build the interest into what you're going into in 6. Oh, yeah, that's better than what I thought of. Okay, let's do that. What would this look like? Let's start playing with it. And then as you build it and play with it, one of the things I found I had to do was as I got done, it said, all right, let's build. I said, no, wait, I want you to go through and I want you, what did we miss? What did we not, like, what should we add? I'm sure we're missing something. What are we missing? Just take a look at it really quick and tell me. Well, if you really want to, like, you know, we could do, it needs this and it needs this. Yeah, it probably needs this too. All right. Then do it. Okay. And it goes off and does it. It comes back and you're like, all right, yeah, that's cool. And then a couple of them even said, look, Rick Wormley, if I showed this to Rick Wormley, what would he say? And it came back and it told me what Rick would say. And it's actually, I think it is what Rick would say. Made me stop for a second and go, oh, well, okay. And then I said, all right, now let's build it. And I build it. When it builds it, it gives me as a doc and it gives me as a PDF. And I go in and I pull up the doc and I play with the formatting a little bit. And I export it as a PDF. And I put that in a folder in Moodle. And I put that in a folder in Google. And so I've got content. I've got questions. I've got vocab activity that is very appropriate. It's all H5P stuff, so it's fun too. And then I've got simulations. And if one of the fifth grade teachers can't teach with that, then I don't know what to tell them. But they should have a lot of what they need. That, and sometimes I threw some of the chapters into Notebook LM, and I said, give me an explainer video. And it was actually a pretty good explainer video. So I think what I'll do next, since interactive books are working again for me, is I might go in and I might build an interactive book, and I'll pull in some outside resources as well, like American Battlefield Trust, and pull in some other things, especially stuff that's happening with America 250, and start pulling that stuff in. And and then I was also, I wanted to pull in Phyllis Wheatley. I want to work in American literature, right? Mm-hmm. Because our kids don't get American literature anywhere in the curriculum K-12. And they need some American literature. And Phyllis Wheatley was such a wonderful writer and talented with words. So I made an H5P activity that analyzes Phyllis Wheatley's poetry. And then music. Our kids don't get music. And then 61% of our kids, they don't listen to music, anything that's not a certain kind of music. And I don't mean like rap. I mean, they only listen to music that has the words from the Quran in it. But they'll listen to music if another kid will play it, right? And then and they're hooked. And yeah, so they'll tell you, I only listen to that at home. That's fine. I understand that. I know at work and other places that, or school and other places that they don't. So I said, hey, Yankee Doodle, you know, let's do a music study on Yankee Doodle. And so I made an H5P studying Yankee Doodle. And I said, let's do one on Chester. So I built an H5P around Chester. So I'm giving them the arts and culture side of the social studies as well, because I know they're not going to get it. And they need to realize that this wasn't like somebody woke up in the morning and said, oh, I'm just so tired of the British. Can we leave already? And I want them to understand there's a whole lot of other things and cultural things that happened along the way that they need to understand. There's a really cool video on George Whitefield that's coming out on Angel Network. It's going to hit theaters here soon. I don't know exactly when. But I know kids are going to see that, right? So maybe it's time to take a little George Whitefield and throw that in there. It's a little after what it's more eighth grade than it is fifth grade social studies. So I probably that's on the back burner. And the next thing after that is going to be art. So I want to talk about woodcuts. I don't want to talk about the printing press. And then I want to talk about Ben Franklin's sayings, Poor Richard's Almanac sayings, right?
Yeah.
Because there's some really good stuff in there, and have the kids start analyzing and figuring that out. And give them the first half of Ben Franklin's saying and let them create a second half. Like, what do you think came next? You know, just play with it, have fun. I'm not asking you to know it. I'm just saying finish the thought, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, and you could do that, and then you could do like a drag and drop. Kind of thing where you have a bunch of them and say, okay, you came up with this. Here's what Ben said. and then have them kind of match them up so they get to think about it again and do some critical thinking there as well.
Yep. So I want to talk about the power of the printing press. There's some other things I want to talk about. Alien and Sedition Acts tie in with Ben Franklin. The only person charged under the Alien Sedition Act was Ben Franklin's grandson. And he was never convicted because he died before he could be brought to court. So,
isn't that convenient?
Anyway, so, you know, there's a bunch of things I want to deal with. We need to talk about the First and Second Bank in the United States. But that's more eighth grade too. You know, so, and then I talked about this with you. So they don't have a lot of time, right?
Right.
They get 45 minutes a week for social studies. Yeah, that's it.
That's unfortunately not unusual.
I'm just tickled to death that they're putting it back in, because up until this point, it's been 0 minutes per week social studies. So right. One of the things I asked ChatGPT to do is I said, look, everything we do, I want you to put in the English language arts standards for this. Like, tell me how this ties in. Show me the interdisciplinary connections here so that a teacher walking in goes, I thought this was social studies, but I could do this for my persuasive part for English. Oh, I could do this for, you know, this standard for English. You're right. And tie those things in.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I said, all right, we need to streamline some things. So we're going to have the kids in our simulations, they're going to be either the Continental Congress or regular Congress. And we'll just keep this piece the same. We'll just change the things they talk about as they go. So when they get to chapter four, they go into Congress, right? Or into committee, it's going to be that way all the way through chapter seven. And they just change the things that they talk about, so that it streamlines the process and makes the time use more efficient. You're going to say something.
No, I was going to say that it's one of the things that I think holds a lot of power, especially, well, maybe not especially, but is sometimes overlooked, is that elementary teachers are frequently doing meeting multiple standards, and they don't realize it, or it's not intentional, or they could do things. And a lot of that's like with technology, but social studies can be the same way. It's like you can meet the technology standards while also doing language arts, while also doing math, while also doing science, while also doing social studies. You know, these things aren't completely separated and unconnected. It's just being intentional about it. You know, it's like if you're teaching kid to read, teaching kids to read, they need things to read, and that can be involved in social studies and science and language arts and all of the above. And so making those connections, I think, can be really powerful for teachers and for curriculum people. Because we tend to, especially when you get to high school, you really look into boxes, right?
Yeah. Like,
which box is this? And middle school tends to do that somewhat, but middle school also tends to have much more interdisciplinary work, and elementary tends to have even more. It's not always intentional, but they tend to have it. 'Cause as you said, frequently they have like 45 minutes a week for social studies. They have 45 minutes a week for science, and you know, science doesn't get taught explicitly either. And we know explicit teaching is powerful. And so it's something that I think is a real power in middle school, is that there can be an interdisciplinary activities and pedagogy. It's one of the reasons I was such a big believer in teams, because when you create those teams and those teams can work together and they have time and they have support, let's say, i.e. pushing, then pushing by the principal. The principal says, you know, we really need to, what are we doing with interdisciplinary strategies here? How are kids tying things together? And you give teachers that and time to do it. They can do some really powerful things. So, yeah. So that's what I was going to say. It's just that there's so much interdisciplinary work, and it can be addressed. It just has to be intentional, and teachers need to think about it and know to think about it in order to do that. So,
and they need time to do it, which is why this week was so important, because that's what I did.
Right. Yeah. Right. On your vacation.
Yeah, that's the only time I get to do it.
So, and I think it's really powerful that you're tagging things with the, with, because you can tag things with multiple standards, right? So
yes,
one thing can be tied with a language arts standard, with a social studies standard, with a science standard, with whatever. So you can have those multiple standards. And then when you go to make a quiz, you can say, because this is all in Moodle, I just want to give context. Like if people are like, how do you do that? It's like, this is in Moodle. You can create quizzes based off of different criteria. So you can say, hey, give me something with these tags, and it'll create them. So every student's test looks a little different, which can be beneficial.
Yes. Yeah, and the nice thing is that with groups, when I create the ELL special ed and regular ed tests, it'll just say test on each kid's assignment or a screen. They don't know that there's the special ed, you know, is different than the regular ed, right? They just have a test in front of it, just like everybody else.
Right.
Yeah. And I like that. That.
And you can like prevent things. You can prevent things like my youngest daughter at one point knew there was a kid cheating off of her. So she answered everything incorrectly. And then went back and fixed it. So that one's okay.
That's funny.
That is, yeah. So that was good. All right, so you've got some adjustments. And for me, you know, one of the things you just talked about is differentiation, right? Mm-hmm. Is you're giving kids what's appropriate for them, where they are, where they need to go. And I think that is hugely popular. And one of the things, and I don't know if I pulled an article or not, but we talked about briefly is, we talked about briefly in pre-show, is that there's several things in the news right now about, I think it's Kansas is pulling screens out and going back to books, and Sweden is going back to books, and there's teachers who are celebrating this like crazy. And I just keep thinking, you know, we really have not done an exceptional job of understanding what technology should be in education. Because we have the technology people are out to replace the teacher, right? Like, this can do the tutoring. This can be the curriculum. We can do a full day of teaching in 2 hours, and then the rest of the day the kids can go out and play. And it's like their belief and where they're coming from is technology to replace the teacher. And I don't think that that's true at all. I don't think that's going to work. And we've been doing this for over 20 years now, right? I think Michigan had the TTI program in like 2001, 2003, something like that. Remember the TTI program? Every teacher gets a laptop. It's like, here you go. We're going to give every teacher a laptop, and they'll magically learn how to teach technology, using technology.
That even before that, there was Jim Blanchard did a program where every classroom got a computer. And that was back in 89 or 90. Because okay. 2GS, my mom got in her classroom, she got an Apple 2GS. That's what she could have.
Okay.
Courtesy of the state of Michigan.
Yeah. I just very well remember the...
I know which program you're talking about now. That was 90.
Every teacher got a laptop, and that was going to magically make every teacher know how to teach using technology. And 2001.
I know which one you're talking about now. Yes. Because I asked for an iBook and was roundly rejected. So I spent my money on an old computer cart and TV that I could connect my MacBook to.
Yep.
Yep.
So we had that. Yep. And again, it was not, there was no magic here. Just giving teachers a laptop did not suddenly spark how to use technology in education. And I don't think that there's been a lot of people that have really figured it out. Because like I said, it's been 25 years now. And far too many teachers, it's not something that's integrated in how they think in the pedagogy. It becomes a substitute. Like there's the whole big SAMR thing, right? With the first thing is substitution, and a lot of teachers have stuck there. And I found it interesting that there was a push. There was like several teachers in some of the groups that I'm in. So the on the online groups are like, they were citing the research that says kids remember things better if they handwrite it versus typing it. It's like, yes. No one said kids shouldn't be writing things. No one said we should go to all screens. And far too many people look at this as an either or instead of an and. You know, use the technology when it makes sense. Give the kids tests where they can get. Give the kids some tests online which are formatted to give them appropriate feedback, which can be differentiated. Give kids other assessments that are physical movement, the four corners, right? Where do you stand? Stand up, sit down. You know, it shouldn't be either or. But so many teachers have never figured out how to effectively use technology. And I really don't think it's their fault. We've not done the training. We've not done the work to combine pedagogy and strategy and resources together. So I'm not surprised that we're seeing that. And then, of course, we have the the recent movement to ban kids from social media and the recent judgment against Meta and YouTube, interestingly, about not protecting kids under 13 or under 16. So, you know, got a lot of that going on. And it's just, again, for me, it's just like, we frequently don't use the technology effectively, except in random, wonderful cases. So, and there's a whole history there that I could really delve onto, but we don't need to make this a 10-hour show.
So. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, no. So, you know, that's just one of those things that I think is kind of going on. So, all right. So that was, you had your kind of your week off.
Yay.
I did not have my week off, but I did fill in for the elementary principal this week.
Did you?
That was wonderful. I had a really good time.
Good.
Yeah, kind of made me remember how much I miss being a principal and kind of the structure of the day and the pace and the messiness and all of that. So I think the bus drivers were confused because you know, I was taught as principal or assistant principal, you meet the buses and you say hi to the bus drivers and you make sure everything was good, that they didn't have any issues that you need to follow up on. You greet the kids as they're getting off the bus and all that. And I don't think they're used to that. So, and they don't know me. So, I mean, they don't know me real well. So, so it was different. One of the things that I spent a little bit on this week was security, because phishing is really a thing, and once a school gets successfully phished, that account gets used to attempt to phish other schools, right? And now it's coming from a legitimate account, which is problematic, which makes it that much harder. Right, it's not coming from, principal's name at principal123@gmail.com. It's right. if you hit the email account, it actually looks legit. So it's trying to remind people that we're not going to ask to change your payroll. please don't do that. So I spent some time doing that, and people really don't realize like how important that is until it bites them, and then it becomes real. So, I spent some of that. Hey, are your kids, you were off this week, so I don't know. Are your kids following Artemis at all or no? Did you hear anything about Artemis?
I wonder, I don't know if the science teacher's done much with it. We haven't had a chance to talk with him much about it. I haven't done much with it because we've been focused on other things. Kids had presentations to do. But it might be something to look at here as we come back from break. But Artemis 2's got a lot of wonderful stories coming out of that.
Yeah, we're starting to get some pictures too, I think. So we'll get some of that.
There's a NASA app on the Apple TV. If you have an Apple TV connected to your Promethean board, and you can just run that in the background on mute.
That would be awesome. So another thing that's awesome is the social web.
It is. Yeah, social web this week. Emily's got a couple of things. Now, I post this because it was Friday, but just so you're aware, they've done it now for 3 years. I imagine they'll do it for four because it's been a wonderful little resource for getting information from kids. Emily has a final call. Today is the deadline to participate in this year's Global Middle School Sound-Off. A submission must be completed by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, Standard Time, on Friday. So watch out next year. It is the one activity that they do that involves middle school kids directly with AMLE every March, because March is Middle Level Education Month. So submissions are in. I don't know if you got your kids in. My kids got their stuff in before we went on break. That was a project in my Social Studies Enrichment class. And I was amazed how many of the kids designed games and simulations, electronic games. You play a character, you play a middle school kid, and you go through school, and you have these interactions with, they used us, the team of teachers. You had to interact with each one of the teachers. And you scored points based on how well you responded to a situation in class.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because this is not something that they do well. So I think there was some learning. They were demonstrating that, you know, that we've been trying with them and we've been working with them this year on that. And I think there's some learning going on. They are now able to, say, no, this is what you should do. Now we're going to internalize it and have them say, oh, this is what I should do. But, you know, baby steps, we're getting there. It's coming. It really is. This group is one group I'm able to step back and go, oh, the light at the end of the tunnel is not the train. There is hope. We'll get these kids through yet. And you need to know the AMLE posted presentation proposals are now being accepted through April 10th for the 53rd Annual Conference for Middle Level Education. I believe it's going to be in Nashville this coming year. Nashville seems to be a hub for AMLE. Yeah. I've not seen them go to the west side of the country. They did Orlando. I went to the one in Orlando. It was fairly well attended.
So what are you?
Indianapolis,
what are you,
I heard, went really well.
What are you presenting for the 53rd conference?
I would like to present, maybe even co-present with a recently retired tech director on H5P activities in social studies.
You are an award-winning, a badge earning at least.
There you go, badge earning. I'll go with that.
Badge earning H5P author.
That's true. I have I do have some credentials now, some street cred. I got it down on my badge. What was I going to say? Oh, I was thinking about doing something with H5P. So I don't know if we'll do a session on it or. But one of the things I want to play with too is a choice board. One of the activities in H5P where you have to make it's a decision tree, essentially.
Branching scenario.
That's the one, branching scenario. and I would like to show that off, build one, and then show it off. What I would love to do is take each chapter in the fifth grade social studies program and build a branching scenario in H5P for each chapter. That we're talking about, that would be months of work, because in my scenario, I would have them, I would do a lot of reteaching as a branch.
Right.
And then that just takes a lot of time and it's a lot of tedious. Well, I did take a look at how to do that with OpenAI, and it said, here's what I'll do. I'll build it and I'll tell you where to put the pieces. And I was like, okay, we can do that. And then it just started getting time consuming. I just didn't have the time. So that's on the back burner, but I am going to do it.
The most powerful branching scenarios that I've seen so far have involved videos. And that's just probably a aspect of which H5P branching scenarios that I've seen. But the most powerful ones that I've seen have been like, here's people role playing this, and then like, what should this person do? And it's like, oh, because now you're combining video, audio, and decision-making, and they can watch the thing over. It's like, okay, if I was in this role, what would I do? And one of them did it, like, from first-person perspective. So it's like you're looking at how these other people are acting and interacting. And I just think that is so awesome. But the amount of time and resources that would take would be...
The labor.
Incredible. But once done, it could be really, really awesome. And there's times when I just... think, like, even if you took some, like, if you went to some of the places that are, they do recreation, you know, they have the actors, and you could do some of that. That would be like, that'd be awesome. But
if I only knew a guy who had some time on his hands coming up.
If only I gotta tell you, I got a list.
This one goes at the top because we have to get our presentation in by April 10th.
So
we don't have much time. While you're watching the game this afternoon, by the way, you know that four, the Wings are playing at 12:30, Tigers at 1:10, Pistons at 3, and your alma mater at 8 o'clock.
Wow, that's like a lot.
You have a long sports day ahead of you. Yeah. Just saying, you need a break. Branching scenario. That's all I'm saying.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce this, so I'm just going to go with C-E-T-L-U-W-I. Set Louis? I don't know. Mona. I think Set Louis is actually the... it's an acrostic of a university's name.
Yep.
At SETI or SETL or SETI Mona. Join us for an upcoming workshop. Don't. It's past. I just wanted to highlight the topic. If this, then what? Designing H5P branching scenarios. Build your own adventure-style learning experience where students student choices lead to different outcomes. You can register at a link that we put in the show notes, but I'll tell you right now, it's passed, but I think they'll do it again. So hold on to it, right? And just kind of keep your eyes posted. I think one of the things, too, that could be powerful with branching scenario is the reteaching aspect, right?
So yeah, absolutely.
If you don't get a DLK-4 question at the first time, it sends you to a reteach and you get a DLK-3. Then it sends you to a reteach where you get a DLK-2.
Right.
And then it sends you to a reteach where you get a DLK-1. And then it sends you to the next piece of the lesson. Right. But if you pass it here, then you get to move to the next part and you progress. You don't have to sit in class and wait for somebody who doesn't get it to get it before you're allowed to move on. It's just neither here nor there. Just I throw it in there. Also from Set Louis, introducing our Let's Deal With It teaching emphasis series. I thought this was good. They're doing a kickoff series on H5P tools, and it's just a whole series of webinars. You lunch and learn, bring your lunch. We'll do a quick thing on your lunch break and in H5P, and you can move on. Now, since they're dealing with university professors, I think it might be a little easier for them to do that. But there's something that, you know, like the 4 o'clock factory, 4 o'clock faculty idea, where you could do some things like that here with a group of teachers or a team of teachers that want to learn on a particular topic. I think you could do that. This one I'm going to expand, so watch out. Your show notes are getting to move on you. Just thought I'd let you know. Okay. That's a programming note for the listening audience. Abraham Oka at InfoHub. Here are 25 online libraries for academic researchers. It does not HTML very well, so I took a picture and posted in there. But the links are there. You can type it in. 25 open libraries. You can go and grab and add to your research. Like if you're making a notebook LM and you want to pull in stuff to throw into the notebook LM, go grab open source stuff and throw it in there. even JSTOR has an open access area, right? JSTOR's got some really wonderful, good research stuff. And you could pull stuff from here to then start creating and building things inside of your open or your ChatGPT projects, your Claude Cowork, your Gemini Gems and Notebook LM, and a number of other things too as well. So there you go. I've got 22. 25 was a lie. I don't know where they got that from. Abraham, you shorted me on 3. So there you go. Susie Dent, as an aside, an unspoken rule in English known as an ablaut reduplication means that we never dally-dilly on the way to the game of Pong Ping where the bells go dong-ding, nor, sadly, do we ever eat a catkit.
Yes.
There you go. All right, there's your language thing for the day. Middleweb had a post review, create a classroom of math problem solvers. It's a word problem workshop. So one of the things that we're noticing in our math curriculum over the past 10 years has been it's not so much math as it is reading and decoding and informational text. And if you can read well, you can do the math. If you can't read well, the math is never going to come. And so our math teachers have ended up having to do a lot of teaching reading in order to do the math because there's a huge amount of text usually involved with each math problem. Is it a math problem or a math puzzle? I wonder. Anyway, this is a book review on helping your math kids become math problem solvers. And it deals with the reading piece of the whole math learning. So I thought that was an interesting review. I put that in the show notes for you. And it's over at Middleweb. And Dr. John Norton does a wonderful job over there at Middleweb. If you get a chance to support him, please go and do that. Make it one of your strategies for your classroom.
Yeah. Cult of Pedagogy has a article on 8 ways to squeeze writing instruction into a few minutes. Ooh. And I got a kick out of they talk about literacy has been always been a hot topic in education, but right now it's the emphasis seems to be on reading and not on writing. But mm-hmm. writing is really fundamental, and it's really important for kids to write. So they have 8 of them. Word family brainstorm, and that is to the idea here is to take a word and start uncovering its relatives. Number 2 is word family stretch, which is closely related but has its own distinctive shape. Number 3 is prefix swap. Number 4 is sentence scramble. Take a sentence and break it into its component words or phrases written on index cards, scramble them together, and ask the students to put the words back together.
Cool idea.
Sentence expander, start with a kernel sentence that's, you know, kind of short, like the cat purrs, and then build on it together by asking students a series of questions. Which cat? What color? Where? Why? When? Number 6 is sentence combining. Number 7 is what's another way? And this is one of the executive function kind of focus with cognitive flexibility. And then finally, a new angle. This one also targets cognitive flexibility, but zooms out from the sentence to the story level. So if you're looking for ways to add in some writing, take a look over at the Cult of Pedagogy. It's also a podcast, so you can also listen to it if you prefer that method. If you would rather listen than read, or if you want to do both, you can do both. Let's see here. We also have one of the things that I think is really important is for kids to understand each other and kids who may be different and have different abilities in that. So this one is from Tech Learning and it is on deaf awareness. There's lessons and activities. And they have a lengthy variety of resources that you can check out and use to help kids understand, like, what's it like to be deaf? How would that change your interaction? And what happens if you're dealing with someone who's deaf or hard of hearing? I just think it's really crucial to give kids that different perspective about the world and other people and understanding other people. Let's see here. You like free resources, right, Sean?
Oh, I have that gene where I'm a, if it says free, I'm there.
And this is Scholastic has a free TV channel. They're on YouTube, but they're also on Roku, Firefly, the Apple Store, and Google Play. And these are things that are from Scholastic, so they're focused on being appropriate, school appropriate. And free. And you might want to max out your TV experience.
Yes. Yes, you do. Holy cow.
Holy cow. Mean maxing.
Yes, mean maxing. It was the maxing part that threw me. Yes, you could be TV maxing. You could be Scholastic TV maxing. You could be podcast maxing. We've talked about this before the show. Access to Culture Translator has been talking about meaning maxing. So apparently there's a trend among the students where our teens where they're adding maxing to everything. So if you're wearing headphones, you're headphone maxing. And so what it is teens are adding the suffix maxing to anything and everything. And why? Well, it comes out of the incel movement where people are trying to change their appearance and maximize their appeal. So they're maxing everything, right? There's China maxing, there's matcha matching maxing, there's friendship maxing, there's everything. And I think they make a really good point that at the end of the day, if everything is maxing, then nothing is at all. Yeah. So it's just taking and turning the suffix into a meaningless thing. So just be aware. It's going to pop up in conversation somewhere, probably between now and June.
Yeah. And this is one that I came along and I thought I'd share with Larry Furlazzo.
Yay.
You know, good old Lara Furlazzo. I love his titles. Write in English is a new and free AI tool I created that is a rough approximation of something that could be very effective in helping ELLs.
That's catchy.
That's catchy. Here's the thing. This is what I thought this was really cool, because this is something he writes about. And he says that he used to use something called WordTune, which was expensive, and it was to help ELL students identify options. So he decided to vibe code something.
Oh.
Okay. So, you know, everybody's probably heard about the vibe coding, and you can code and do that. And he says, first I tried Google's Gemini, which had a promising start. In fact, it told me it could even connect to Google Sheet so that teachers could see who used it, what they wrote, and which words they'd actually chosen.
Oh.
But then its instructions got too complex and convoluted. It ended up recommending that I take my idea to ChatGPT.
That's interesting.
ChatGPT then basically threw its hands up, if it had them, mm-hmm. and said it couldn't do it. Finally, I went to Claude. After many exchanges, we created Write in English Tool, which is free and accessible to everyone and anyone. And it says, in theory, after every few words you type into it, it's supposed, which is in italics, to show you three words to consider choosing as the next one. Mm-hmm. The words it uses are supposed to be the 1,000 most used English words, and it's supposed to be able to choose the three words by mimicking the literacy of a beginning ELL. In addition, each of those three words has a short explanation with you. It's also supposed to tell you if you misspelled a word and how to spell it correctly. And then he says, it's clunky and doesn't do everything it's supposed to do. And then this part's in bold. In fact, I don't even think it works well enough that I would use it in my own classroom. And he says, you know, maybe in a year or two this would work. But doing this took several hours, far longer than I had expected. Vibe coding is not as simple as it's supposed to be. I think this is a kind of a good lesson that, you know, you may hear about vibe coding, but frequently it takes a lot of work. And the more of an understanding that you have as to how coding works, the better it is. But I just thought it was an interesting article that Larry Ferlazzo tried vibe coding, and he's got a thing, but he doesn't suggest that you use it.
I wonder if he used... So Claude is really, really good. And there's a number of teachers that I have seen their comments. They're leaving ChatGPT and they're going to Claude, mostly mm-hmm. because they like the language features of Claude, which I think is interesting. And then there's a number of other people who said, I'm going to Claude simply for the programming, which I think is also very interesting. But there are some other ones that are dedicated, and I wish I could remember the names, that are dedicated, that's all they do is programming. And I wonder if he used one of those, if he wouldn't get a better coding result.
I don't know. Claude is the one that coding that I've heard of.
It's really
right
good.
Now. Everybody's using, not everybody. I don't want to say that.
I wonder if he used like an 8N or something.
Frequently I've heard that if you're doing coding, Claude is the one to use. So, but if you're looking for middle school information, middleschoolmatters.com is the place to go.
Yeah.
We've got links to everything we talked about this week. We've got a lengthy history of things that we've talked about, over 18 years of stuff.
Really?
So you can head over there. We would love it if you'd go to the podcast catcher of your choice. Tell us, give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And over at middleschoolmatters.com, there's a link you can reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you as well. Naturally, tell your friends, tell your fellow teachers to listen to the show. We'd appreciate that. And with that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed. expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guest and not indicative of any employer.